Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Radio Free Arabia Liberty's weekly podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis and Radio Free Arabia Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. On November 6, a major incident took place near the Tajik-Afghan border. The Tajik authorities say it was an attack by ISIS militants on a Tajik military border post, leading to the killing of nearly two dozen people, including 15 attackers. Details are scarce, and the only source of information we have is the government of Tajikistan. But so far, information released by them is raising more questions than answers as to what just happened, who did it, and what does this really mean. So we are here to connect all those dots by digging deeper into some of those question marks. To do so, I'm joined by Samuel Rahmani, a doctoral researcher at the University of Oxford with a background in regional security, Momin Ahmadi, journalist with Radio Free Europe Liberty's Tajik service, Radio Azadi, is with us from Prague, who's the author of many articles on ISIS fighters of Tajik origin. Catherine Putz is with us, who's the executive editor of The Diplomat with focus on Central Asia, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today on the Majlis podcast.
Thank you.
So let's start with you, Momin. So there are so many unknowns about this alleged incident. So keeping unknowns aside for a moment, let's talk about what do we know, what has been confirmed so far about this incident. I guess you guys have just reported some new details as to the number of soldiers killed in the incident. So tell us more about that.
Yes, Tajik authorities said the attack on the Tajik border post committed the so-called Islamic State militant group. Tajik security office only have given few details about the attack, just a few kilometers from Uzbekistan border and 60 kilometers west of Dushanbe, capital of Tajikistan. The border guard service said that 20 people crossed from the Qalaizol district in Afghanistan's northern Kunduz province on November 3rd into Tajikistan's Qobodyon district. Many facts are not unclear yet for us. First, this part of border is more safe from Tajikistan side than other part of border Tajikistan with Afghanistan. If you know, Tajikistan have more than 1,000 kilometers border with Afghanistan. Right. Why this group used this way and cross border not comment authorities yet? Second, ISIS doesn't do mass attack as I know. If you remember, in Syria and Iraq, they attacked to military post by van. For example, one jihadist went to post and commit suicide bombing. We find another detail that between attackers was some women, that three of them detained alive and two of them died during operation. Five of the attackers was women. Government said only one policeman and one border guard killed in Sultanabad border post. But we find the names of the six military that killed during this operation.
So I saw that report today, I think, on your news agenda.
It was your own investigation, or you were told by the authorities? It's my investigation. Okay. That 15 from attackers group and six from government. We know the name of that officer and soldier that killed. Our sources said it was a seriously attack, but they not share more detail. I don't know just why.
That's the
government not publish the name of attackers that killed and detained during operation. Also, today we find the name of five of the attackers who detained by Tajik security service. Two of them women and three of them men. So sources say that they are from East Afghanistan.
Okay, any prominent person among the names that you were able to find out so far?
Our sources say that the three of the dead people detained from 2015, that they not were in Tajikistan.
Okay. What I was saying is, like, is there any, like, prominent person among the names that you were able to discover so far? Any, like, any leader of any? I mean, do they have any previous record?
Yes. I have the name of the person that our sources called him a leader of group. But it's only one sources. You know, we are not published details that we find from one sources.
Yeah, sure.
If the second or third sources say it's right, then we publish it. I know the name of one person. He's situated in Afghanistan now, but we don't know that he committed this attack or another people.
Okay. Let's bring some other people in the discussion here. Sam, you might wish to jump in here. So ISIS did not claim this so far. So how do we know even the attackers were from ISIS and they come from Afghanistan?
That's an interesting question. I think that the fact that ISIS didn't claim it is quite noteworthy because in August 2018, which was the last attack on the cyclists that occurred in Tajikistan, ISIS claimed that attack right away, even though the Tajik government was alleging that those attacks were carried out by IRPG. So the reason why ISIS couldn't be claiming the attack could be several. I think that, first of all, ISIS is trying to make itself maybe a bit less of a target right now from the United States after the death of Baghdadi. I think that there's a recent UN report that drew a lot of attention to ISIS-K's rising presence in Afghanistan, and you've seen a gradual increase in the estimates coming from the U.S. officials of the numbers of troops, from 700 to 2,000 now, maybe into the 3,000 range. So ISIS is rising on the radar of the United States and many and the African government and many other countries as a major threat. At a time when they're trying to regroup and rebuild and regain access to funding from their illegal mining revenues, their forestry revenues, wherever they get funding from, I think they just don't want to make themselves maybe as much of a target right now, particularly in light of recent development.
Sam, I have a counter argument on that. They just lost their leader in Syria. In situation like this, the ISIS we know, they usually carry out a flashy counterattack to remind the world that they are still relevant. So why would they shy away from such a PR opportunity in case if they did it?
I think that's also a very valid counter argument too. I mean, because this definitely does seem to be very much out of character for ISIS, because ISIS usually does claim these attacks. So it could have been like another alternative option. We need to be looking at the Taliban. We need to be looking at the internal Tajik forces. Yeah, it's really hard to say exactly why. I mean, it seems a bit puzzling.
Okay, Kathy, Bruce, both of you have done a really great feature stories on that since the incident took place. So let me start with you, Kathy. So if they were not ISIS, then who were they?
If I had that answer, that's $1 million question, right? I hesitate to say because I don't know and I have no way of knowing. I think when you look at the place and the timing and sort of especially given the pictures and the narratives that have come from the government, I mean, it could be a group of militants coming from Afghanistan. It could be a group of irregular migrants who got ambushed. It could just be some people out for a joyride. How do we know? I mean, if I had that answer, then I would have said it. I am skeptical of the sort of attribution of this to ISIS without further evidence, because it doesn't quite fit what I would say is sort of the pattern of ISIS involvement in Afghanistan. If you go back to the attack in summer of 2018, that very much fit into a ISIS sympathizer system of a very familiar tactic, a very familiar target, being foreigners in Tajikistan, pledged allegiance to ISIS before, sort of all of the hallmarks that would tell you that this was an ISIS attack. This, however, was a 3 a.m. possible raid on a border post on a dirt road in rural Tajikistan. My question would be really not just who were these people, but if this was a genuine attack, what was the purpose? What was the target? Maybe it was to acquire weapons and then go do something else. But I also have just sort of questions based on the photographs there's just a lot of questions that I don't know that are going to be answered satisfactorily. But I think there are several reasonable versions of a story that could fit the evidence that we have that points to a number of different actors. So I wouldn't know which one it is.
We definitely like to talk about the holes in the picture. Yeah, they raise lots of questions. Before that, Bruce, I know you also have some suspicion about the narrative released by the authorities on that story. So about the identity of those people, probably we will never know. But one thing is known, that drug traffickers are also very active in those areas, especially I'm talking from the Afghan side of the border. I've been to that district, Kalaizal is called, in Kunduz province. I know how it looks like. There is no ISIS, by the way. It's almost controlled by the Taliban. So does this narrative make any sense to you, that they come from Afghanistan, they were ISIS, and if not, then who?
Well, the who part is going to be tough. But no, of course, obviously, this doesn't make any sense. And there's a few moments here that I would pick out to show why the Tajik government's story about what happened doesn't seem to make any sense at all. And as you mentioned, they came from an area in Afghanistan where we know the Taliban have been firmly in control. I mean, they came out of Kunduz province. How many times have the Taliban tried to capture the capital of Kunduz province in the last few years? So they're firmly entrenched there. There's no way a group like ISIS could possibly have gotten a foothold there without the Taliban knowing about it and wiping them out. So that doesn't make sense. But if we're willing to follow the Tajik government's story, they made it into Tajikistan on November 3rd. Now, for some reason, two of the cars, as I've been talking with the Tajik service with Mumin, two of the cars had Dushanbe license plates. So it looks like not only did they illegally cross over the border, but then instead of going to attack the target they wanted to, they went all the way to the capital first to pick up cars. Now, it's already suspicious that being in Afghanistan, which is abundant in weapons, they decided to cross the border without bringing any weapons with them.
Yeah.
Then go to the Tajik capital to get cars to drive down to this rural area where they then decided they would stab some policemen, steal their weapons, and then stage an attack. You know, already so it doesn't seem to add up very much. The thing for me that really shot holes in the whole Tajik government story. And I was talking with our friend Bill Rogio, for instance, and Thomas Jocelyn, and I said I could not remember ever hearing of an attack that the ISIS has ever launched, or Islamic State of Khorasan, where men and women both fought together in a joint attack on a target. There have been female suicide bombers. There have been female defense units within ISIS, but there have never been any examples of men and women from ISIS fighting side by side against a target.
And so, only with five AK-47s, at least that's what's being reported by the Tajik authorities. I think, I don't know whether there was any other reporting on that side. Why would someone attack a military post with five AK-47s? That's another really a big question. And also, Bruce, you also raised that question, the license plate of the cars. And then in looking into those pictures, there was one really eye-catching, the guy who was handcuffed and burned to death. How you really explain that one? I mean,
obviously the security forces captured him. Now, whether they chose to summarily execute him at the site, which is possible, you know. And then there was another part where two of the cars, one car was almost intact, at least in the photos that we saw. The three cars, you could see one was almost intact, one had been beat up a little bit, one was burned down entirely, and we've talked a lot about this. You can see that there was a tire on top of the car too. Now, we don't know, maybe the back, it's possible that the back was full of something, and so they had to tie the tire onto the car. But it sure looks like that one car got it going over. And you know, not to compare what's happening in Tajikistan to New York City, but I remember when there was a place in New York by where I lived, and when they would steal cars, they would bring them up to this place that was a walkway under a road and park the cars there, steal everything they could off it, and then light it on fire and burn it, because then you couldn't get any evidence off it. So there's also that, you know, why is the one car in such bad shape? Maybe it got rocketed, I don't know. But considering the one guy was clearly cuffed and had been restrained before he'd been killed, but unless they're so ghoulish that they decided to handcuff a corpse. I mean, there's a lot of things about this that don't make sense. And as you mentioned, that they published these pictures and then they took them down, you know, because a lot of people started on Twitter right away. Were like, well, why is the one guy handcuffed lying on his stomach and presumably dead, you know, in pictures which were taken 5 or 6 hours after the firefight?
Very interesting. Mumin, and also talking about those pictures, you know, the area where those killings took place, it looked like a village, not a military area. I mean, what do we know about that area?
The authorities says they want to go to Dushanbe, then it road that they are killed. First, they attacked to Sultanabad border post. Then they tried to go to Dushanbe in road that they killed. But this story, remember me, the accident happened 2 years ago. If you remember, in Vose district, in near border Tajikistan to Afghanistan, The police killed four relatives, Gulmurat Halimov, and detained three of them. Mm-hmm. Seven of relatives Gulmurat Halimov, the Tajik colonial ministry interiors that joined to ISIS. The relatives of the Gulmurat Halimov tried to cross border and join to ISIS in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and they killed there.
That's what the authorities say, right?
This story is like this story, but when the ISIS fighters want to attack any place, they never near close mask. Because the ISIS ideology, they say we will kill enemy and we are also killed. They haven't think about the back roads, back ways.
Right. Moment, when the authorities say that those people were planning to go to Dushanbe, do they also say anything about what those people going to Dushanbe for?
No, unfortunately, the authorities not more comment about it. During 2 days, we try find any details, but unfortunately, we find that some details, but unfortunately, okay. As I said, it's from one sources.
Yeah, that's.
But everything government say, we must check it.
Definitely. That's what we are doing now. Sam, yeah, lots of holes in the story, the narratives projected by authorities. So looking into this from the militants' point of view, what the objective of an attack like this could possibly be? I mean, attacking a military post coming from Afghanistan and this particular military post, what could be the objective there in case if they were indeed ISIS militants and they were indeed came from Afghanistan, as the authorities say?
Well, I think that it certainly is aimed at, first of all, showing that they've got power projection into cross-border and into Central Asia. So they certainly want to show that at this period of time. And if it was not just even just ISIS, that could be the case. It could be other militant groups as well. For example, Al-Qaeda was recently noted in the UN Security Council report to be strengthening its position and presence in Badakhshan, nearing Tajikistan, and nearing Paktika. It's engaging with Wakayani Network strongholds on the one hand, nearing closer to Pakistan, and it's also attacking these areas too. So they would have a legitimate reason of trying to show that they can attack this. If they can attack this, they can sow discord here and create disorder. They'd be able to ensure that their organized crime networks or cross-border narco-trafficking, some of the other things that they tend to do, will be able to continue unimpeded, and that the government is losing the war against that. So it could be, in some ways, a propaganda shot or a warning shot at the Tajik government, that they're able to do that. So Al-Qaeda would have an interest in that. The Taliban certainly would have an interest in that because of their presence in Kunduz, though they're now being a lot more cautious about crossing the borders. So the Taliban is probably not the likely suspect here, per se. But if ISIS is involved, it would probably be for a very similar reason, basically to show that it can attack military targets in Tajikistan. Because it's been about 18 months since they had the attack on the cyclists. They haven't been doing that much cross-border focus. They've been more focused on killing and attacking Afghan civilians. They've been responsible for about 11% of the deaths in Afghanistan last year, which is less than a third of what the Taliban's been responsible for. And the number of attacks are overall decreasing. So they would want to show an increase in power projection and show that after Baghdadi's death, they can continue to gain new recruits, they can continue to have momentum.
Very interesting. Now we know at least six soldiers were killed in what the authorities say an ISIS attack. If true, regardless of who did it, it's a cause for huge concern that something is terribly going wrong out there. So what is it and what does this really mean? So we will continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. That today I'm joined by Samuel Ramani, a doctoral researcher at the University of Oxford, Momin Ahmadi, senior journalist with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service Radio Azadi, Catherine Putz, executive editor of The Diplomat with focus on Central Asia, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlog Owozi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the latest incident near Tajik-Afghan border that led to the killing of 21 people. So let's dig into this little bit more, Bruce. Let me start with you. You had just a story along this line. Is there any clue in the timing of this incident, why it happened now, and in that particular day and location?
Well, it could be a coincidence, but there were several things going on. Obviously, Rahman was out of the country at that time, making a trip to Europe. I suppose that would be one thing where they might be trying to get some headlines while the Tajik president was out of the country. It was simultaneously Constitution Day and the anniversary of Rahman being elected president the first time, and November 6, 1994, when they actually voted in two separate votes, one to approve a new constitution and restore the office of the president, and two to elect a president, which ended up being Rahman. So, you know, the date had some significance. Now, I couldn't say for sure if they timed it to be, you know, on November 6th. It could have just been an opportunity presented itself, they felt, at that particular moment they could do it. You know, it seems fairly clear that whoever these people were, they didn't have very much military training because they pretty much got shot to pieces. We don't know if they moved the bodies around very much or anything, but the pictures they showed seemed to indicate that these people barely got out of the cars before they were shot down. And they did make the effort to dress themselves up, as Mumin pointed out. They dressed themselves up all in black, you know, with masks and everything. So I guess they had a plan, but it seems to be unclear exactly what their plan was. You know, there's the theory that the Tajik government was so quick to blame ISIS because they did not want anyone to think there was internal dissent within Tajikistan, that it couldn't That's have been also. Tajik citizens just on their own living in Tajikistan that carried this out. But actually, the evidence seems to suggest that that's exactly what happened. So, you know, and there's a number of reasons why these things could happen. You know, people with family and imprisoned, but business deals are often the source of conflict in Tajikistan. So it could be something like that, although to get 20 people together and dressed in black to go out and drive and try to attack a military post, no matter how small, is something also. And, you know, that's another point, is even the target that they got. If you're ISIS and you want to make a big splash, then you want to attack something big. Even if it fails, if you attack the Interior Ministry building in the Capitol or blow up a statue in the Capitol or something, then you get a lot of headlines. When you attack a border post, you know, in a rural area by the Uzbek border, it's not going to get you a lot of publicity. It will because there was an attack, but it's not as powerful as a lot of other places they could have chosen to stage an attack.
Any thoughts, Kathy, from you on that?
I agree with Bruce. This is not a particularly flashy target have struck. If this is ISIS, it doesn't quite fit into the pattern of other regional involvement that they've had. I also have questions about if these folks crossed from Afghanistan on November 3rd, what were they doing for 3 days, and how were a group of 20 people packed into four cars riding around southern Tajikistan, but not noticed by anybody? And given how much investment Tajikistan, Russia, China, the United States have done in border service development, I think somebody has to ask the question of where has that training gone if it is not in identifying suspicious men clad in black driving around.
Yeah. No, there are so many questions. And, you know, I'm still going through from the perspective of, let's imagine if the story that authorities are trying to sell is true. So it's a major, major issue, like, 21 people killed. It's a major development in Central Asia.
If the government's narrative is correct, and this was a group of ISIS fighters who crossed over from Tajikistan, there are multiple points of failure for the Tajik security services.
Yeah, definitely.
That should be interrogated. So it's sort of, no matter how you read this story, there were failings.
And of course, I'm saying there has to be a reaction, kind of regional reaction on that. I mean, has there been any regional reaction so far on this event? Have you guys seen anything from the authorities in Central Asia?
I have not, but also Rahman's still in Europe. If this was a major terrorist incident in my country, I think I would fly back to it. He's still in Europe.
Bruce?
There's that. And you know, today, Asia Plus reported that the Uzbek border post right by the area is still open. So it's obviously not a concern for the Uzbek government either at this moment. Now, that said, of course, there was the CIS meeting, you know, which was in Tashkent. And there were comments that indicated that at least the Russian members of the delegation there took this to be a serious event, and they're pretty much buying into what the Tajik government said, and comments about strengthening the CIS southern borders, and so some of these organizations, and certainly the Russian-led organizations, have taken this seriously and seem to be more or less accepting the Tajik government's version at face value at this point.
Yeah, but anything to read in those reactions, Bruce? Anything they are planning to do about this development?
you know, general comments about strengthening the southern borders, southern CIS borders, but we've been hearing that for years. You know, I mean, we've had on this program years ago, we were talking about Russia, you know, Russian estimates of just how many ISIS fighters there were in northern Afghanistan. And that ranged from the high hundreds to, you know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, you know, and there was never any proof. We could never figure out where they came up with these figures.
Tajik ISIS fighters in Afghanistan, as I know, a recent report by the United Nations Security Council on August, the report says Saivali Shafiev led a group of approximately the 200 fighters who hail from Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and other Central Asian countries. The report says Shafiev is also involved in recruiting Tajik fighters for ISIS and using online propaganda in the Tajik language. But the Tajik fighters in Afghanistan, I said they are in Afghanistan. But in the last accident, we haven't a fact that they are an ISIS group. Maybe we await if they really the fighter of ISIS. I believe if they come back across the border and come from Afghanistan, I believe they publish video and audio and other facts, because ISIS before attackers, they record video, if you know, every accident.
Yeah, at least this has been the past practice. So we will probably never know what really happened there. But it is also a fact, Sam, that there is certainly a security risk in that area, both sides of the border in Tajikistan and in northern Afghanistan. So it's not the also first such incident that's taking place in Tajikistan, blame or with involvement of the ISIS militants. In case if this incident has happened the way the authorities say it happened, what does this really mean?
Yeah, definitely. This is not the first incident that's occurred in recent months. I mean, there's been some outbreaks of prison violence, for example, that have been linked to ISIS members. There have been like the deaths of three prison guards and inmates in May, even at a maximum security facility just outside Dushanbe, which shows that even in law enforcement facilities, they're losing control of ISIS. And there were allegedly as many as 17 ISIS members involved in that. So there's large numbers of cells being involved in high target areas. So I would agree that Tajikistan's got a substantial problem if it is something to do with ISIS, because they have 1,900 Tajik nationals who joined in Syria. Many of those have now been repatriated. Some of them, I think there were about 76 who returned from Iraq and Syria and got amnesty. So as they're trying to reintegrate these people into society, normalize and downplay the threat levels, they're having more and more of these type of attacks. But it's more convenient for the Tajiks, of course, to pin these attacks on ISIS or a transnational threat than domestic terrorism, which is an even bigger fear. And responding to Bruce's point about Russia's response, that was very interesting. Alexander Bortnikov was talking about the strengthening of the Tajik-Afghan border. And that comes right after a series of some very interesting announcements and policies from Moscow. Late last month, there was the first ever S-300 deployment on the Tajik-Afghan border, which shows that Russia is taking more control over securing that area. They were more concerned about policing practices, too, after a violent incident at the Tajik embassy and Tajik military base against Russian nationals in September. There's, in general, a concern, I think, from Russia, Tajikistan, and many other countries about this crisis. And it could lead to Tajikistan's security being outsourced even more to foreign powers. Russia could step in with more missile defense launches, more modernization investments, maybe even these more permanent air defense and counterterrorism facilities, and also China, too. They held drills in Gorno-Badakhshan in August. They deployed 1,200 troops there. And that really discomforted Russia, because it looked as if China was taking control over their security unilaterally. So if the Russia and the Tajiks cannot resolve this, we could start even seeing the Chinese taking more action here on the pretense of defending the Belt and Road. So there's many geopolitical and security implications of this event.
Yeah, let's
both the Tajiks, the Russians, and the Chinese.
Yeah, talking of the implications, Bruce, you had the story on that. So, you know, as I said, probably we will never know what really happened here. But what is clear is we are going to see some of the implications of what just happened. So where your eyes will be on this?
actually further west. Mm-hmm. I think that Russia will work its way around to Turkmenistan pretty soon, and where we know there actually was an ISIS presence, at least briefly, and start leaning on the Turkmen and saying that you guys, if something like this had happened in your country, your government could have fallen easily. Even an attack on a remote border post might have encouraged some of the discontented people, of which there are many in Turkmenistan. Mm-hmm. So I would think that Russia will use this, one, to get Turkmenistan closer to it, but also a little bit to try to convince Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan that maybe their future lies in the Collective Security Treaty Organization. Mm-hmm. I don't think Turkmenistan would take that step. They've made it part of their policy for years now that they don't want to be involved in a military bloc, but it might be considered a little more carefully in Tashkent in the future. Although, like I said, for what it's worth, the Uzbeks don't seem to have considered this to be much of anything at all. They haven't reinforced their border. They didn't send any extra troops to the area, anything like that. So whatever intelligence they've received from that, they seem to be convinced that there really is no threat from there.
Right. Unfortunately, we have to end the discussion here. But Kathy, let me also take your point on regional implications of this incident. I mean, where your eyes will be going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think the broader implications are that if you look at the headlines that came out of this incident, I think the New York Times had the most egregious of them. Tajikistan is going to continue to be known as a hotbed of terrorism, even though I don't agree with that assessment. I think this distracts from the actual security risk that Tajikistan does realistically face. I think sort of inflating some of these incidents is a way in which the state sort of does itself a disservice. If this happened the way that it did, what Tajikistan and everybody needs to be paying attention to is why all of the training and money that's been put into the Tajik Border Service has come up with nothing. And so I think I will be watching what the Tajik state does in response to this, because that tells me what their actual assessment of this was. If the real assessment is that this was a bunch of drug smugglers who like screwed up with their bribes, then there's not going to be a huge response. If the assessment is really that, oh shit, this is ISIS, then you should be seeing further training on that border, remedying some of the issues that allowed these people to slip through. And that's what I'll be watching, sort of what the Tajik state's actual response to this is, as opposed to what its sort of public PR outreach storyline is.
Right. Okay. If I could just throw in too, I got the stopwatch already going on when Russia first reproposes to send its border guards back to the Tajik-Afghan border, which they've done many times. But if it's really that serious, sooner or later, someone in Moscow will say, we're ready to send our troops back and help you out.
Lots of questions. Thank you very much, colleagues. Unfortunately, we have to end the discussion here, but it was really a great chat. Thank you, Samuel Rahmani, a doctoral researcher at the University of Oxford, Momin Ahmadi, senior journalist with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, Radio Azadi, Catherine Potts, executive editor of The Diplomat, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was really good to have you. So this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.